Welcome to the podcast of Focus 580, featuring interviews with newsmakers and experts on international affairs and daily life, hosted by David Inge at WILL Radio, Urbana, Illinois. Please support this service by becoming a member and visit us on the web at will.uiuc.edu. Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton. Glad you could listen. During this hour of the show, we will be talking about the benefits of exercise across the age spectrum. Our guest, Wojtek Hotko-Zajko, he is head of the departments of kinesiology and of community health here at the University of Illinois. This is a subject that he spends a great deal of time researching and speaking and writing about. His primary research interest is in the area of aging and physical activity. We'll try to make this a very practical program for you if you have questions. A little bit more about our guest. Wojtek served on the World Health Organization Scientific Advisory Committee, which issues the guidelines for physical activity in older adults. He also serves on the American College of Sports Medicine Strategic Health Initiative on Aging and Exercise, and he's the editor of the Journal of Aging and Physical Activity. Much more we could say about our guest. He has written widely and speaks a lot to the media, travels quite a bit speaking on these topics, and we're glad to have him with us during this hour. If you have questions, all you have to do is call us. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. And your questions are, of course, welcome. And Wojtek, good morning.
Good morning, Jack.
Thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Just to kind of get started, I had a conversation with someone recently who I won't name. They're a very nice person, but they told me, I don't ever exercise. I just don't see the reason to do that. I mean, I'm somewhat active. I walk down the hall, to my desk and so forth, but I just don't see why anyone would waste time exercising.
I think it's probably best to start off by differentiating between the concepts of exercise and regular physical activity. Mm. For many of us, I think we've grown up with the conception of exercise as being something that happens wearing special clothes in special places and special times, whereas I think a more generic concept of building physical activity into your everyday life can occur anywhere at any time. It includes things like walking the dog or being outside, perhaps doing some chores or gardening, or even healthy commuting, riding your bicycle, and so on. And the first point I would make is that there are extraordinary benefits to be had from both types of physical activity. So absolutely, it's good to have an exercise plan, but there are some people who prefer to be active. And if they can build 30 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity into their everyday lives, there's good evidence that they will get physiological, psychological benefits that significantly reduce their risks for chronic diseases. So the bottom line is your friend needs to be physically active. Whether they can build physical activity into their everyday lives or whether they choose to do it through a more formal, structured exercise program, if they don't do it, sedentary living is associated with an epidemic of obesity and other inactivity-related diseases, and the consequences are lower quality of life and decreased independence as they grow older. So I would strongly encourage your friend to get up and get active.
Now, when you say moderate to vigorous physical activity, 30 minutes or so, what does that mean?
Well, it means different things for different people because you can't say that walking at a particular pace translates to being moderate or vigorous activity because people are in different kinds of shapes and different kinds of conditions. And what for one person is very easy, for another person might be significantly harder. So I like to think of it as purposeful exercise that is enough to make you begin to raise a little bit of a sweat, a kind of exercise that you still feel comfortable having a conversation with a person, but not to be totally out of breath. So something that you can feel, but not something that wipes you out, would be characterized as probably a moderate activity.
Mm-hmm. I think this is a very interesting area to talk about because, you know, I know people who also probably go to the other extreme that, you know, they, as especially, you know, maybe I even do that as I'm getting older, you know, I try to you know, run and do things that, you know, make me think I'm still in my 20s. Mm-hmm. But as we get older, there is probably good reason to modify what we do to get our exercise or activity.
You know, I think it's very important for people to develop a personalized activity plan that fits in to what their goals are and what their capabilities are. And there are some people who really like to exercise at high intensity levels. There are people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s who want to run marathons or compete in the Senior Olympics. And I think that that is wonderful. And if people want to do that, and they view themselves as athletes, there's no reason why people of any age shouldn't do that. But my point is that the CDC recommendation for health is to build 30 minutes of physical activity into your everyday life, and it's not necessary to do more in order to get a health benefit. But that doesn't mean that doing more is a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that part of the challenge is a lot of people have defined physical activity in terms of what they did when they were in high school as a teenager. And when they're 35 or 40 years old, they run out on the weekend and they try to overdo it. They become kind of weekend warriors. And my sense is that people need to develop a physical activity plan that meets their needs now, and they need to think about how they'll modify that plan in the future as they grow older, so that they're less susceptible for injuries from trying to do too much when they're not equipped to do it.
Mm-hmm. How do you develop that plan? And, you know, when you're, if you want to sit down and deliberately think, well, let's map this out, how would you go about it?
Well, I think that first of all, you have to consider what is it that you want to do now, and what is it that you want to be able to continue to do in the future? I work mostly with older people, but very often when I'm talking to an older person, they'll tell me that I get the most quality of my life playing with my grandchildren, and I want to be able to continue doing that for as long as possible. And so there you would then talk to the person about what is it that you like to do with your grandchildren. Do you like to play ball with them, or do you like to take them for walks? And then you need to start looking at what areas of functioning do they need to improve. Is it the strength? Is it cardiovascular or aerobic function? Perhaps it's balance, perhaps it's flexibility. And then the individual can craft together a program that makes sense for them. Now, very often a person can come up with a program by themselves, but if they can't, it's often a good idea to discuss this with a health or physical activity professional, perhaps at the Y, perhaps at a local gymnasium or a club. I think increasingly there are personal trainers and exercise scientists who are equipped to give a person advice. So you don't necessarily have to permanently have an individual like that, but it's not a bad idea to ask a professional for some suggestions for what would be an appropriate kind of activity.
Going along with that, there are different measures of health and fitness. You mentioned flexibility, mm-hmm. and strength and various things. I guess I'm curious what you know. You do research and a lot of teaching, and you know, run the Department of Kinesiology. What are some of the interesting areas of research that are going on with regard to health, fitness, and aging?
I think that there's been an explosion of research in the last two decades looking into the health benefits of remaining physically active. And initially, that research focused primarily on demonstrating a strong evidence base that people who are active are healthier than people who are sedentary. Mm-hmm. And now I think we have accumulated a wealth of evidence that shows that physical activity has physical benefits, psychological benefits and also social benefits for the individual. Now I think that in addition to accumulating more evidence, people are beginning to ask questions about how do we help people stick to a physical activity program. So I think people know exercise is important, but they have difficulty either initiating or maintaining a physical activity program. There's a lot of interest in what's called the behavioral factors associated with sticking to a program. So how can we help a person who doesn't naturally resonate with physical activity to find a program that works for them and that they enjoy and that gives them benefit? So many of my colleagues at the university are looking into psychological factors related to self-esteem, related to self-motivation, and how we need to attend to those factors in order to help people find the active choice that works for them.
Mm-hmm. Let me just reintroduce our guest is Wojtek Hoszko-Zajko. He's a professor and head of the Department of Kinesiology and also of Community Health here at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. We're talking about health, fitness, and exercise across the age spectrum. Any questions you have are welcome. All you have to do is call us around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. So you're basically saying that we have gathered enough information to know that it's basically good for people to exercise across the age spectrum. This is not really a question. The question is motivational factors and maybe determining good ways to develop plans for, you know, given individuals. What do we know about how many people really do take advantage of what we know about exercise, or are actually engaged in what you would consider a good practice?
If you take the recommendation from the Centers for Disease Control, which is 30 minutes of physical activity on most days, only about 25% of the population exercises at or above those levels. Mm-hmm. And those numbers get worse the older the population gets. So people over 65, people over 75 exercise even less. So we're doing a very poor job of convincing the American public to build more physical activity into their everyday lives. And part of the challenge is to figure out how do we as a nation increase our focus on prevention and keeping the population from developing disease as opposed to a more biomedical model that's geared to treating diseases primarily through medication.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, as people get older, they have different injuries or a lot of people have back issues and things like that. I can speak from experience there. Mm-hmm. That then they react perhaps by withdrawing from an activity.
Yeah, you know, I think as people get older, they get more varied. Mm. So it's not right to say that as the population gets older, they get more frail or sicker, because there are many excellent examples of people who remain robust, vital, and capable of exercising. There's just greater variation between people. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's important for people to realize that physical activity doesn't have to be defined in a particular way. For some people, perhaps a good example would be the Arthritis Foundation has a number of outstanding exercise programs that work very well for older adults with arthritis. Some of those are pool-based programs for people who have problems with knee joints and so on. Essentially, virtually everybody can benefit from some kind of physical activity, and the trick is to find the activity that is right for you and that you enjoy doing.
We have a caller to talk with. Let's do that. Welcome others if you'd like to join us, 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Listener in Evansville, Indiana, on line number 4. Good morning.
Yes, sir. I'm interested in creatine in order to develop muscle mass, and I was told that you should cycle that. Have you got any idea of how you would do that? I mean, would you take it like 2 weeks on, a week off, or a month on, a month off? Or
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think you raise the issue as to whether or not taking additional nutritional supplements is important for people who are physically active. And my stance on this is that if people have a general well-balanced diet, it probably isn't necessary for people to take protein supplements or I know that there's a lot of interest in creatine or growth hormone or even vitamin supplementation, but my perspective on that is that that's really focused on somebody who has bodybuilding goals, which is not something that I think most people in the population would want to do. And so I actually prefer not to comment on particular nutritional supplement regimens because I think that they're not necessarily something that I would advocate for the general population.
Okay, would the same go for DHEA?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Okay, thanks for the call. Yeah, there are a lot of these things, you know, that seem kind of scary, actually, you know, and various people have gotten into trouble with because some of them are actually illegal or at least not sanctioned in competitive sports, to put it mildly.
Yeah, I think that part of the challenge is when people become very committed to any kind of activity, in this case a kind of physical activity, they start looking for ways that they can become even better and so on and so forth. And of course, it's not restricted to older people or kids in high school. It's, I think, a challenge for us as we strive to be excellent. We have to learn how to keep a sense of balance. And my feeling personally is that we should be satisfied with maximizing the potential that we have rather than trying to use some sort of artificial stimulants to get even better. But that's my personal opinion.
Well, we have another caller to talk with in Mattoon. Let's go ahead and do that. Line number four, good morning.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, I'm in my mid-50s. I am significantly overweight and I'm trying to, you know, work on these issues, and as you were talking earlier, because I have grandchildren I want to be able to play with and live long enough to see grow up. I also have some issues in the lumbar region of my back, and one of the things I've been reading about is the importance of a strong and healthy core. And I'm wondering if you can suggest a way for someone in my situation to go about working on that in order to do something positive without being silly about it.
Right. I think that the kind of situation you describe is very common for many, many people. And my first comment would be, if you're significantly overweight, it seems to me that you need to combine a physical activity regimen with a nutrition regimen, because physical activity alone is not going to address the overweight issue that you have.
But I'm working on that and making progress.
Great. Well, then I would say that for most people, a physical activity program that is well-balanced mm-hmm. will include a cardiovascular or an aerobic component, a strength component, a balance component, and a flexibility component. So not every workout, but as the total package, you should be thinking a little bit about strengthening your body, about making sure that you have the stamina to move around. That's the cardiovascular component, mm-hmm. and trying to stay flexible and also to help with your balance. For a lot of people who have been sedentary for a long time, my advice is to start with something very basic and simple and gradually build up. So you could do, for example, some walking for some people as little as 5 or 10 minutes initially and gradually build up until you're able to walk continuously for 30 minutes. And a lot of people find that very inexpensive step counters are a really good way to track how much walking they get in a day. Some simple stretches, some simple balances, and not to try and overdo it. I feel that if you've been sedentary and you've managed to get out of shape, start with 2 or 3 times a week and gradually build up until you can meet the CDC recommendation. It may take 6-8 weeks to get to where you can do 30 minutes continuously, regularly, and that's okay. Because really the most important step is the first step from zero physical activity to not being sedentary. And how long it takes you to get up to the 30 minutes of activity, that can vary from individual to individual. My sense for you would be to set yourself a goal of trying to do something physically active on most days. And once you've done that for a month or so, then you can start thinking about, well, how can I specialize to focus on my real issues?
Okay. Well, I have a recumbent stationary bike, and I ride about 40 minutes, try to ride at least four times a week on that, average probably 3 to 4 times a week. I'm going to begin doing Tai Chi again. I used to do that on a regular basis. And I'm wondering if something like a very basic introductory Pilates tape or something would help to address, you know, the core issues without, you know, overtaxing myself right off the bat.
Pilates is a kind of exercise that focuses on balance and calisthenics exercises that are geared mostly to strengthening the back and the abdominal muscles. Mm-hmm. I think that a simple introductory Pilates program, maybe you could do it at one of the excellent local facilities we have here, or you could do it at home. That would certainly be excellent. I don't think there's anything magical about Pilates that would differentiate it. The three choices that you've talked about, Tai Chi, a recumbent bicycle where you're sort of sitting backwards in a kind of a chair-like device, and Pilates put together would be an excellent combined exercise program. Work a few of those in each week, and I think that you'll make significant progress towards your goals.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for the call. And, of course, Wojtek, we met at a Tai Chi class, so you know, that's certainly something I know you're familiar with. And there's been some good research, even here at the University of Illinois, on Tai Chi.
Absolutely. There's been significant research looking at the health benefits mm-hmm. of Tai Chi and also Qigong, which is the more meditation component of Tai Chi. And there's a real interest in looking at how people in Asian cultures have defined physical activity and trying to learn from that culture. And many people in Asia are also looking at the way we've defined physical activity in terms of more traditional exercise. And it's really beautiful to see that we're learning from each other's science. So while you see more people over here doing Tai Chi, if you go to China or Japan or Korea, you see more people exercising in health clubs using the Western model. So cross-fertilization, I think, is always good.
That's great. We have another caller to talk with in Effingham, line number one next. Good morning.
Yeah, I got a question. I'm sort of like in endurance sports, and I've been doing it for five or 6 years. And as I've been doing it, my sort of embarrassing bedroom activity has been sort of suffering. You think, is that part of the...
You know, there is a research base looking at the influence of exercise, and by that I mean relatively high intensity exercise on libido and sexual functioning. And I think that there's some evidence that in people who exercise very hard, there may be a relationship between libido and sexual functioning, especially in people who ride exercise bicycles for many hours a day. Bicycles. Oops.
We lost our caller there, but I think the question was plain.
Yeah, so people who ride bicycles for many hours can have, especially men, have sexual problems. I think that these are very rare. I wouldn't want to get across to people that you don't want to be active because it's going to have an effect on your sexual functioning.
Mm-hmm.
These are unusual situations, and I would encourage the reader to just check with their physician who will be familiar with those kinds of things. It's not a common side effect.
Okay. Hope that gets to the caller's question. We are talking this hour with Wojciech Hoszko-Sajko. He is the professor, actually head of the Department of Kinesiology and the Department of Community Health here at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, talking about fitness across the age spectrum and health issues as well. Any questions you have are welcome. Our lines are open at the moment, 333-9455. Toll free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. I always have a bunch of questions. One, you know, you mentioned nutrition, and we were talking about nutritional supplements and so forth. I'm kind of a fast food snob, and I'm probably a little bit, you know, overboard on that. But it does seem that, you know, as I get older, what I eat affects how I feel and my ability to even, you know, do my regular routine. Mm-hmm. How important is nutrition, I guess, is the question.
Well, you know, I want to stress that I'm not a nutritionist.
Yeah.
And my perception is that both physical activity and nutrition are integral and highly related components of an individual's wellness and prevention plan. And frankly, it makes no sense having a commitment to physical activity and ignoring your personal nutrition habits and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And so I think that they really fit together well. And increasingly what you'll see in recommendations from the government is to try to find a way to balance your eating and your physical activity needs so that you have a well-balanced combination.
Now, this may be my imagination, but it seems that when people are younger, they can basically eat anything, and it doesn't seem to have the same effect as when they're older. Is there any research to show that's true?
I think you're right. That is your imagination, and I would disagree wholeheartedly. Okay. I think we have in this country an epidemic of obesity that is reflected at all ages. So you see more and more substantially overweight children. Most states of the union now, CDC data suggests that about 25% of the population is significantly overweight or obese. So no, we have a problem, and it's a problem at all ages. And I believe it's a combination of decreased activity levels in our everyday lives, as well as increased caloric intake, as well as poor nutritional choices, more fast food, etc.
Okay. We have a couple callers. We'll go next to someone in Champaign, line number one. Good morning.
Hi. I don't know whether this is within your realm of expertise or not, but I have a son who's a runner and puts in a lot of miles, you know, 4 or 5 miles a day at least, you know, 6 days a week probably, and is very good about staying hydrated, is pretty good about eating, particularly for a teenager. He's, you know, got a really reasonable diet, but occasionally will get really intense headaches when he comes back from a run. Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea? I mean, otherwise he's seemingly healthy, pediatrician, he's fine. Do you have any idea what that could be and if it's anything to be concerned about?
Yeah, I don't want to comment specifically. I think whenever somebody is having headaches, it's very important to touch base with a physician to discuss the specific case. But having said that, I think that it's fairly common related to dehydration as well as for raising temperature during exercise to have some symptoms of diarrhea and headache after a very intense workout. I was a competitive runner for 30 years, and on certain times when my temperature got too high and I didn't rehydrate quickly enough after a run, I would get headaches after a run too. Now, you know, obviously I can't comment that this is what's happening with your son, and it's always valuable to get it checked out, but I would think that that's a possibility.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. And how easy is it to become, short of hydration if you're running a long distance? I mean, you're using a lot of water.
Yeah, I guess what I want to start off with is differentiating. The last couple of callers have mm-hmm. talked about side effects and symptoms that occur extremely rarely in instances where people are working out very hard, and that this is not characteristic of the kind of physical activity that we're encouraging individuals to do. So the kind of 30 minutes of moderate walking or riding a bicycle, yes, it's important to drink, especially on hot days, but we are not going to see significant dehydration or a significant malnutrition following these kinds of exercises. That really becomes more of a problem following intense competitive exercise.
Marathons, for example.
Yeah. You know, 30 minutes of walking doesn't burn many calories, and you don't want to go and have a huge breakfast after your 30 minutes walk, because you're going to take in far more calories than you expended. So people don't need to get into the habit of thinking that if they just have a modest physical activity program, they've got to start eating more. Absolutely not. Your normal nutritional habits will be more than sufficient.
Very good. Several callers waiting. We'll go next to another Champagne listener on line number 2. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yes, I'm wondering, and maybe this is outside your area of expertise, but if good exercise and good cardio fitness can offset bad cholesterol, or is exercise and its relation to cholesterol, is it just supposed to bring it down? I guess my question is, does it offset it?
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that there's a clear relationship between regular physical activity and a whole host of blood lipids that are associated with cardiovascular disease. If you exercise more, you will bring down your total cholesterol and your bad cholesterol and increase your good cholesterol or your HDL cholesterol. So I think that one way to look at this is, for people who have normal cholesterol, exercise is a good prevention to prevent the cholesterol from gradually creeping up as you grow older. And if you've been told that you have high cholesterol, physical activity and good nutrition can help lower it, sometimes in conjunction with medication and sometimes without medication, and that really depends on your physician's advice.
Okay. But if it's bad and you're exercising, bad and you need to pay attention to it.
Well, if it's bad and you're exercising, there's a potential that you can bring it down through physical activity. Like many conditions, a combination of physical activity and medication is sometimes the best. So people who have high blood pressure or hypertension, very often they'll get medication to control their high blood pressure, and as they begin to work out, they can actually reduce the dose of medication following advice of their doctor. And sometimes some people find that they're able to go off the medication completely, but that typically doesn't happen until after extended time of regular physical activity.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for the call. We'll go next to a listener in Urbana on line number 3. Good morning.
Hello there. How are you, Wojciech?
Hi.
Wojciech, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, good. I would like to talk about research for the older people, and I mean those are 70 or above. And I've noticed that if elderly people fall, it's pretty catastrophic, probably ending their life much earlier than it should have been. I'm wondering about Tai Chi for balance, the use of that type of exercise to help the elderly gain better balance, so possibly preventing more falls, and also Qigong, which allows for relaxation of various parts of the body as well as in the balance. Could you comment on that, please?
Sure. I think there's tremendous research interest in the last few years into fall prevention programs, because you're correct that falls can be catastrophic for many older people, and that they fall and they break a hip or an arm, and there can be real challenges in coming back from those kinds of injuries. Fall prevention programs, from a physical perspective, focus on strength and balance. If we can help people keep their balance, then they're less likely to fall. If we can help people increase their strength, they're more likely to be able to recover their balance if they do lose it without falling. And so there's a tremendous focus on programs that focus on both those issues. So weight training is now increasingly common in older adults, and programs such as Tai Chi, Qigong, as well as simple balance promotion programs where people learn to step over objects, are very, very valuable. There's also an increased focus on people doing checks within their own homes to make sure that they don't have rugs that they're likely to trip over, or environmental scans to reduce the likelihood of a fall. And actually, there was a meeting in Washington, D.C. just last year to develop a national strategy to try to reduce the likelihood of falls, and physical activity is a very huge component of that.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for the call. Mm-hmm. We have just about maybe 15 minutes left with our guest, Wojtek Hoczko-Zajko. He is the head of the Departments of Kinesiology and Community Health here at the University of Illinois. We have one caller waiting, and if you'd like to join us, you can certainly do that. Around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free anywhere else, 800-222-9455. We'll go next to another Urbana listener, line number one. Good morning.
Yeah, I was wondering if you would agree that, and I have another question beyond this, but you would agree that just plain housework would not qualify as exercise in any way, shape, or form.
I'm not sure that I would agree exactly with that. I think that it depends on what population you're talking about. It also depends on how vigorous the housework would be. So the biggest challenge, I think, is to move people from a completely sedentary lifestyle. I know some people who, during the commercial breaks, stand up and walk around the sofa or the armchair several times, or walk up and down the stairs. Do I think that that is as good as 30 minutes of continuous physical activity? No, not at all. But do I think that aggressively doing some household chores can help? Absolutely, yes, I do. And so if you take the vacuum out and you vacuum several rooms of the house, I think that that is better than nothing, although I would agree with you that it's probably not as good as having a more balanced physical activity program that deliberately tries to cover all of the systems of the body.
Yeah, okay. Well, I know someone whose family has a lot of osteoporosis, and I was interested to read that recently someone developed a program that focused on the wrists, spine, and hips through weight-bearing exercises that strengthened those areas. I think that's one thing you haven't mentioned. I don't know if you have anything to say about that. But what was really interesting recently is that there's a lot of thought that there's quite a benefit as far as Alzheimer's and dementia when it comes to exercise, and they theorize that apparently, I don't know if they're qualified to talk about this, but the theory, at least, is that some of the brain structures that are involved in memory are quite deeply embedded in the brain, and that...
Okay, let's take them one at a time, and I'll try and address those. So osteoporosis.
I'll hang up, thanks.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Osteoporosis, you lay down most of your bone early in life, and then gradually you lose it after about the age of 30 or 35 or so. And for women especially, you accelerate the rate of loss following the menopause. There is some evidence to suggest that if you are physically active, you can certainly reduce the rate of bone loss, but the physical activity really has to be weight-bearing activity, and resistance training or strength training can help. But for most people, once they get old, it's a combination of physical activity, nutrition, and if they're osteoporotic, some kind of medication. With regard to the benefits of physical activity for cognitive functioning, to date, there really hasn't been a large literature with respect to patients with Alzheimer's disease. We know that if people have Alzheimer's disease, on days that they are physically active, they tend to be less aggressive and have less of the acting out behavioral symptoms of Alzheimer's, but there's not really a strong relationship between any of the cognitive or memory factors. However, for regular people who exercise regularly, some of the outstanding research done at the University of Illinois by my colleagues, Eddie McCauley, Art Kramer, Chuck Hillman, we've got some of the best brain scientists in the world studying physical activity and exercise, and they're showing that regular cardiovascular exercise is associated with significant changes in the frontal lobe that are associated with improvements in cognitive processing. So people who exercise regularly, they are able to offset some age-related changes in cognitive functioning. So that's good news.
Good. Hope it gets to the question. So our lines are full. We'll carry on here. Someone on a cell phone next, I'm not sure they're actually available to talk with. We'll go next to someone in Will County on line number 4. Good morning. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm a 55-year-old moderately active, and I've been doing various aerobics and a little bit of strength training for, let's say, 6 or 8 years. And I've had a few injuries and spent some time at various physical therapists. Now, the sense of my question is the unevenness of the literature or instructions on physical fitness. To wit, there isn't an exercise book that I, let's say a strength training book, I can pick up where I can't find some recommended activity that is absolutely verboten by some therapist or orthopedic doctors. Given that, an ounce of caution goes a long way. Specifically, I want to ask you about Pilates. Is there a way to vet the wide range of Pilates instructors that are providing services today to ensure or at least get a better confidence that a particular instructor has well-respected skills and physiological knowledge and so forth and is likely to provide a better better result or at least a safer result than, the rest of his or her colleagues? I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Okay. That's a challenging question and a good one. There's a lot of debate on whether or not we should require as a nation that people who give physical activity advice should be certified by a particular accrediting body. And there are some major organizations that certify exercise leaders. The larger ones are the American Council on Exercise and the American College of Sports Medicine, but there are many others. And my sense on this is it's not as simple a situation as you would believe. We don't accredit chefs at restaurants, and you don't go to a restaurant because the chef has a particular license. You go there because the food is good. And without question, there are many exercise leaders who do a fabulous job and who don't necessarily have a particular certification or accreditation. And my concern is that if we mandate a particular license or a particular accreditation, it's going to reduce the number of leaders and drive up the costs associated with physical activity. It is far more expensive to go to a physical therapist than it is, let's say, to just go work out at the Y. And so there are pros and cons. I would say if you have concerns about the qualifications of an exercise leader, absolutely you should ask, tell me, where have you been trained? And if they tell you they've been trained in the Department of Kinesiology and Community Health at the University of Illinois, you'll know they know what they're talking about, regardless of whether they have a license or not.
Very good. Well, hope that helps. We have just about 8 minutes left and several calls waiting. We'll get as many as we can in here. Next, someone on a cell phone, line number 2. Good morning.
Hello. I'm 70 years old. I am not now and never have been a couch potato. My principal exercise device is a dog. We walk about 4 miles a day. But I also do Tai Chi. But I also like to swim. And now that they've closed down Impey, what do you suggest?
I think they closed Impey, right? You faded out there, but you're talking about Impey, is that right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think that there are a number of pool alternatives. Remember that closing down Impey is not because we don't support the importance of swimming. It's because we want to have a beautiful, wonderful, magnificent new Impey, and you can't get from the old Impey to the new Impey without a transition period. But the program that you have, a combination of walking the dog, which is a fabulous form of physical activity, Tai Chi and swimming is excellent. And so I would encourage you to try and find another pool. And if you can't, I think that you could consider perhaps adding a group exercise program or some strength training temporarily until you can get back in your pool.
Okay.
All right. Thanks so much for the call. A lot of us are waiting for that new MP building, which is going to take a while.
And it's going to be worth the wait.
Yeah, good. All right, well, we'll carry on here. Someone in Champaign next, line number 3. Good morning.
Hi. A lot of university programs have intramural sports if you're a student or a faculty member, but I am neither and am thus excluded from participation in those. And those were my primary source of activity when I was attending university. Is there any free activity or relatively inexpensive sport activity that is available at the local level?
Sure. I mean, the Champaign-Urbana Parks and Recreation Districts have offerings of both group and individual activity that's appropriate for all ages. And you can also become a member of the recreational gymnasium here as a community member. And I think there's a misapprehension that faculty can join the rec center for free. I mean, I pay a membership. I know community memberships are available. They are a little bit more expensive, but not prohibitive. And I think they're very competitive with the kinds of memberships you can get at commercial clubs. And I think there's an increased realization that we should be offering not only physical activity opportunities, but group sport activities, team sport activities, and competitive sport activities for people of all ages. I would strongly encourage you check with the local Parks and Recreation Department. They have a brochure that outlines the seasonal opportunities available.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks so much for the call. And I think they even have, like, you know, trips and hiking trips and, you know, various things that, you know, MP also, I mean, Department of Campus Recreation also offers.
There's really a ton of different opportunities. It's just a question of going out, finding them, and then making the time to actually do them.
Yeah. Well, there is a question right there, and I promise I'll get to this last caller in a second here, but time management is a real issue. I mean, a lot of people say, well, I'd love to go, you know, and even in my life, it's becoming even, you know, more difficult as years go on.
And everybody has to solve that themselves.
Yeah.
For some people, they can schedule an hour to go to a gym or to a program, and that works for them. For other people that have caregiving duties and so on, they have to find another way to do it. Maybe walking to work, or instead of having a coffee break in the morning, you spend 20 minutes walking around the building or up and down the stairs. Maybe when you make your weekend trip to the mall, you go half an hour early and you put in half an hour of walking before you buy your first item. I think the challenge is for people to figure out a creative way to build the time into what they do.
Okay, we have a caller waiting on line number 1 in Danville. Good morning.
Hi. I'm wondering, I'm 53 and a little bit deconditioned because of chemo, and I'm wondering if 30 minutes of yoga a day and walking a mile a week is good, and I'll listen offline. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I think that sounds like a great place to start out if that's comfortable for you. I mean, my sense is that if 30 minutes was debilitating and you wanted to do less than that initially, that's fine. I don't think there's anything magic about 1 mile of walking. What I would say is start out at a level that feels about right to you and gradually increase over time. And I think a combination of yoga and walking would be perfect.
We just have about 2 minutes left at the most, and there's a lot we could talk about. I guess, you know, this question keeps, you know, cropping up in the calls, and that is, how do I know what I should do? How do I figure out a plan that works for me? Is there any kind of generic advice you can offer on that?
I would say be creative, flexible, and forgiving, and try to figure out a way that you do something on most days of the week, and note it down. Put a little note on your calendar on the wall, 30 minutes, and just see how many days that you can do. And this isn't rocket science. It doesn't have to be difficult. And gradually, as you start getting better, once you've gotten into the habit, if you want to develop a specific program and you need advice, absolutely. Stop by the local gym, have a talk to an experienced exercise professional, and they'll put together the program that works for you. And if you have to pay a few dollars for some advice in that area, it'll be money well saved, because people who are physically active have significantly lower medical care costs and absenteeism from work. So I would view that as a good investment.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. There's much more we could talk about, so maybe we can ask you to come back in the future.
Anytime. I'd love to do it.
Okay. Our guest has been Wojtek Hoszko-Zajko. He is, again, head of the Departments of Kinesiology and Community Health here at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure, Jack.